And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Back, steps up, delivers downfield, intercepted! Jamari Sharp makes the pick that will clinch Indiana's first national championship.
Of experienced veteran guys are going to come out of here with the school's first national title.
I think it's got to be one of the greatest stories we've ever seen in college football. One of the losingest teams in college football history at the start of the year to now the national champions.
A century of futility is forgotten. The Indiana Hoosiers are the kings of college football.
From the heart of Queens to the ears of sports fans everywhere, this is Sports Kings from Queens. Strap in because the Kings are in session. Today's Wednesday, August 26th. This is episode 249. I'm Gino, joined by my co-hosts, Kevin and Darren. Please catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a look and join our pages. Make sure to leave us some comments, questions. We'll get back to you. If you got anything you want to say, tell us. We'll talk about it on the next show. Tonight, we get into some baseball as August winds down. We continue previewing some college football. We talk about what's going on in the world of sports. We're going to get it started with some baseball. Guys, August almost over here. Yankees, 74-57. Still second best record in the American League. They have four games behind Tampa Bay, who's just still on fire at 79-54. Starting to cool a little bit. Yankees have a 7.5 game lead in the wild card. Some news coming out of Yankee camp. So Stanton probably out for the year at this point. That's what it looks like. Cruz goes on the IL. Weathers goes on the IL. Bellinger's back. Garcia stays hot. Ramos is completely cold. Ramos could just be sitting on the bench. He may not even make the postseason roster at this point. Words on Judge are like non-existent at this point. We have still no idea if he's coming back, when he's coming back. Yankees are completely silent. They're playing well. They're playing the way they are. Darren?
The thing is, just touch on one thing you talked about. We might have seen the last game of Stanton. Let's put it in perspective, because $19 million this year, next year is $15 million, and then the year after that is the club option, right? Which you assume, barring anything, they're not going to bring him back, most likely. Fact is that, what is he, about 40 homers away from 500, right? Somewhere in that range. And if they don't have a season next year, or they have any kind of real major delay, Stanton's chance at 500 homers and the Hall of Fame are done too, most likely. You figure if he has a couple of years left, he can get 20 just by showing up. If he plays 100 games, he's going to hit 20 homers. It's Giancarlo Stanton. I'm sorry. I remember when he came up as Mike Stanton.
Yes, he was Mike Stanton originally.
I'm sorry. My bad. But this could be the end of the Stanton era, who, again, it's been a disappointing era for him, G, we'd have to admit. But in the postseason, except for last year, he's been pretty good. What's up,
Jake? He's got 456 right now.
Yeah, so he's 44 away. Yeah. And, if they don't have a season next year, there's a chance he doesn't get to the 500. Just because of his brittleness. And when they come out in August and say, and Boone comes out in the press conference and says he might be done for the year, he's done for the year. That just pretty much ended it. He was a guy that you were hoping for to be the cherry on top for the playoffs, and maybe he rebounded off last year's playoff and would be a guy. But actually, it kind of helps this team because in some ways, because now you don't have to worry about who you're sitting, I guess. You keep Spencer Jones in there, batting eighth or whatever the hell it is, and Grisham, and
you bring up a good point, Darren, and it's something I was going to ask you, so I'll bring it up now.
Yeah, what's up?
Considering we've seen nothing from Judge, We have no idea about his feasibility, his playability. We have absolutely no idea. Now, if you tell me he's back with five games left in the regular season, you're obviously going to play him.
Absolutely.
You're going to play him. You're going to play him every game you possibly can. Whether he hits, whether he goes 1 for 40, you're still going to play him. Okay.
Absolutely. You have to.
However, you may be forced to play him at the DH spot. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Do you're 100% right, G.
Do you start playing Rice one game a week in September at catcher?
Yeah. I mean, listen, what
I mean,
getting
you
from
may,
Wells,
you may have to.
I mean, what you're getting from Wells has been so non-impressive, non-existent is a better word. You're right, Kev. You know, it's not like you're risking anything. Listen. Could you play Rice for six innings behind the plate and go to Wells if you have the lead? Yeah, absolutely. You switch it. You bring in the better defensive catcher down the stretch, last three innings, last two innings, sure. But I think that Rice might have to start catching a little bit. You can't not have his bat in the lineup because you don't know what Judge is. You know you're not getting Stanton back. Bellinger just came back. Again, we don't know how long it's going to take him to react back. You know, I mean, we're excited about Lombard and Spencer Jones. They haven't played in a playoff series ever in their careers, even though I don't think it's above Lombard. I'm not sure about Jones because he seems to have a little bit more of that swing where he's pitchable to an extent because it's a long
play. I mean, you talk about bad defensive lineups. You want to see some bad defensive lineups? You may have Rice behind the plate. And now everything is all over the map because you're trying to get Judge. You have to get Judge in the DH spot, right? No, wait. To start the game, you may be okay. Everybody's at a regular position. You're fine. But if then you're forced to move Rice to first in a defensive spot to let Wells catch, right?
Ramos goes to second and Chisholm goes to third. I mean, this is what happens. You might even start the game that way with Rice at first. I mean, Ramos has played most of his career at second. I mean, it's not like it's new. I'm Garcia, not Ramos. I'm sorry.
Right.
I'm confusing my new Yankees. Right. Garcia moves to second because he's played most of his career at second. Even though you look at him and you say, that's like Danny Tartable playing second. He looks like a bruiser. It's like, do you really play? It's like Jeff Kent playing second base. You know, you're like, okay, the range has got to be limited. And then Chisholm, who you said is not going to move back to third, you got to move back to third. Or you're going to sit Chisholm? You're not. You're not. You can't take his bat out of the lineup for McMahon. So you're sitting there with all this, and it's like defensively, the outfield would be okay with Jones, Grisham, and Bellinger. You'd be fine. But the infield is a scary infield right there.
it could get real scary.
Especially with arguably the best rotation of any team in the playoffs.
Because if everybody really healthy,
Kev, right? I mean,
if everybody's healthy, you know, now that you got Weathers going down and, you know, you still got some guys still trying to come back and Cruz, I mean, not in the rotation, but Cruz going down, you know, all of a sudden, though, Gino, you were going through the injuries last week. You were complaining about the injuries, and guess what? They've had two more hits this week.
The thing about it is the good news was Fried looks like he's coming back, like, on time.
It looks like it, yeah.
So I'm just saying,
I know.
The injuries, they're all to the pen, really. I know Weathers was a starter, but he wasn't going to be. We said last week he could be your top four if Fried didn't make it back. But if Fried makes it back, he's not pitching unless you were going to bench Rodon, which I can't see them doing for Weathers, right?
I agree.
So if they come out with Schlittler, Cole, Fried, Rodon, nobody's better than them in the starting rotation. No. But the thing is that Rodon's only going to give you six. Fried off the injury, we got to see how far they can stretch him out. Clark Schmidt is going to be back, but you can't stretch him out to be a starter at this point. So he's only a one-inning guy at best, and you got to hope he throws strikes. Yep. The pen is going from bad to horrendous. You know, I mean, it's Bednar and whoever else we can scrape together right now. And, you know, and you can't even – I mean, Blackburn is the high-leverage guy. It freaking kills me. It freaking kills me.
And Hedrick.
Bet cast off.
Hedrick blew the game last night. I mean, and he's been good all year. I can't kill Hedrick, but he was brutal last night. They blew two leads last night. Can't do that. And you know, I mean, you say to yourself, okay, Schlittler's going to have to go eight. And Cole's going to have to get you into the eighth so that Bednar can give you an inning and two-thirds with one and an inning with the other. I mean, that's what you're looking at with those two starters. And Fried, you're hoping he can get you seven. Rodon at best is six. This is what you're looking at. I mean, you know, you have to figure out three innings in the Rodon game and probably three innings in the Fried game. There's a lot to unpack over the next five weeks and change of baseball here, and it's going to be a little bit crazy. Listen, they still have a chance of catching the Rays too. I mean, but the Rays team always find a way to distance themselves. And at the same time, even though they lost tonight, the Red Sox can still catch the Yankees. So there's a lot of different things. The Yankees need that series to be home against the Red Sox if they're in their 4-5 matchup. You don't want to have to wait for that. They have to have that series at home, in my opinion.
I agree. Okay. Mets across town for today, 60-72. Kev,
yeah.
Anything you want to touch on?
Still playing pretty well. Bench is up over 280 now after last night. Three hits. You know, Nolan McClain, you know, we talked about him not having that, you know, maybe he's not the ace, maybe, you know, he's this, that, the other thing. So they put up there, here's where he ranks among all qualified starting pitchers in baseball. Batting average against third. Hits per nine, fourth. Ks, sixth. ERA, seventh. Innings pitched, eighth. That to me sounds like a pretty damn good year.
He's having an excellent year, Kev. The one thing that happened is that the Mets kind of overhyped him a little bit to the point where, let's be honest, we thought last year that Schlittler we didn't know, but McClain was a stud.
Yep.
Now you go into this year and you know both of them are studs. Schlittler might be slightly better, but for this year. It doesn't mean it's going to be – it's close, but Schlittler's been a little bit better this year. But not a lot. I mean, but last year, coming up with McClain, you thought that McClain was, you know, he was Tim Lincecum coming in here. He was going to strike out 38 guys in a 9-inning game. I mean, that's what you expected. And he came out and he showed it that way.
I think the shocking thing to me is, you know, it seems like he, you know, he goes six innings pretty regularly, but he's eighth in innings pitched. No, my God, nobody goes innings anymore, do they? And the one thing I can't stand with Mets fans, you know, AJ Ewing, now that he's in a slump, he's a bust.
That's
coming to Brett Beatty. What's he doing hitting leadoff? He's not a leadoff hitter. Last year, low A, high A, double A, he had on base of 401. He stole 70 bases. 30 games in AAA this year, his on base was 447 and 17 steals in 30 games. How's that not profile? Even this new age, is that a leadoff hitter?
Actually, in the old age, it's definitely a leadoff hitter. In the new age, you would think so, but the on-base percentage alone should warrant it.
And 80-something steals over the last year and a half?
He's going to be a good player. He really is.
He's going to be a good player.
Well, the Mets fan is always a little bit – the Mets fan is like the Jet fan. They just can't wait to fucking complain. Excuse my language. Yeah. They just can't wait to complain about everything and crap on everything and talk about how unlucky they are and all this stuff. And, you know, listen, bad year. Soto out. They got off to the bad start.
Yep.
Stearns made some horrible moves in the beginning of the year to try to piece this team together, which you noted.
Yep.
A lot. And, you know, I mean, and that's what it is. I mean, you got off to that.
Unfortunately, I was right.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the problem. I mean, it's just he pieced together guys, and you know, you can say what you want. If you didn't want Alonso, you did. Guy is having a very nice season over in Baltimore, and he would have done just fine here in Queens.
Yep.
And
you know, Kev, the other thing that happened is Peralta did not give McClain what you wanted him to do, which was – you want a Peralta to come in here and take the pressure off him as a one.
Yep.
And you want a Peralta to be the one and McClain to be the two. And when Peralta just didn't pitch well at all, McClain had nowhere to go. So even when he was pitching well, it didn't matter. When he was pitching bad, it was a second guy in a row pitching bad.
Yep.
So it went nowhere, you know? So
and he went six today, Peralta. He had his best start as a Ray.
Ray. and you know, it gets me too. You know, people criticizing Andy Green. You know, he tie game the night he brings in Yan. Let's see what the kid can do. He gives up the game winning home run. All right, give him a shot. Saturday, he has Senga up. He was loose. They scored two late runs. He still pitched Senga. You know, Senga's warm. He's ready. You got to use him.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Sunday, you have a chance to test him, bring him back second day in a row. Go for it. He gave up the home run. Fine. That's part of the learning what Senga can and can't do and what he personally feels like Cohen back-to-back days. I mean, I don't care about wins and losses. You got to put these guys in position and see what they can do for the next 4 or 5 weeks. That's all it is.
Agreed. Listen, the bullpen is completely pieced together, Kev. It's a bunch of guys that you didn't expect to be in this bullpen start of the year.
Yep.
Now you want to see who you have. And like, you know, Gino says, everybody's bullpen sucks. Maybe the Yankees worse than everybody else, but everybody else's sucks too. And, you know, but you've seen some good things from these kids.
Your favorite, Lavender.
Lavender, Duarte. These kids are. I know Duarte lost the game the other day, but he's been good.
Yeah.
Even Yan's been good. I mean, he a little too celebratory on stupid things.
I know.
Listen, 20 years ago, we would have been smiling about it. Now that we're in our 50s, we're not. We're old.
Yeah.
Gino's the youngest mentally of us, so Gino might still enjoy it a little bit. But me and Kev, we're old.
I'm the oldest chronologically and mentally.
Exactly. And I'm right there with you mentally. Gino's the only one that's like, you old fuddies. Let's appreciate the kids and the game.
Hey, get off my lawn. Get off my lawn, kid.
Exactly.
It's a little celebration. You guys get over it. Jesus.
it's a little stupid when you haven't done anything special yet. I mean, I'm just saying. You close out the game. The game's over. I get it. You know.
All right.
But I get it. Listen, you know, the Mets are at least trying to build something there at the bottom. Hopefully they're able to round out their roster, make a couple of moves next year. You know,
if there is a next year.
Well, if there is a next year. The outfield, if there is a next year, set. You know who your three outfielders are. Yep. You know who your shortstop is. You know, now let's see what the king of run prevention does the rest of the way.
Yep.
Exactly. And comes up with. Interesting thing here. Just looking at it, there are only 7 players that are hitting over 300 in baseball coming into today. But he's in the names, though, okay? Okay, so the leader is Jordan Alvarez, right? So, you know, he's that's great. Arias, second.
Great player, except when I had him 1 year in fantasy.
Exactly. Now he's tearing it up. Arias, second. You know, he always hits 300, all right.
Yeah.
And the other 5 guys, Chandler Simpson. Nick Gonzalez, Otto Lopez, Gabriel Moreno, and Yandy Diaz. These are the 7 guys hitting over 300. Meanwhile, there's 11 guys with over 30 homers.
Yandy, sure.
What? Yandy, you see, because he always does it. Otto Lopez.
What?
Thought maybe. Gabriel Moreno. Come on. Nick Gonzalez. Chandler Simpson. He was brought up as a speed guy. He didn't even know if he was going to get on base. Now he's got a long hitting streak, and he's tearing it up.
Yep.
But there were 11 guys going in today with over 30 homers. Only 7 guys hit 300, but Schwarber, who hit his 40th today. Alvarez, who's fighting for that triple crown, 36. Olsen, 36. Caminero came in 35. Goodman came in 35. Ben Rice at 34. PCA, 33. Alonso, 31. And Otani and Wood each with 30. And a bunch of guys are 29. And Devers is 29 tonight as well. I mean, the power's still there, but nobody knows how to get a base hit anymore.
No.
Freddie Freeman, 299. I'm not counting him. He's under. Screw the Dodgers.
Any teams in the wild card standings?
The Guardians have suddenly made the run now here. Now they have the last spot over Texas, who's winning tonight. So let's see what happens there. But they're also only 2.5 behind the White Sox now. So 3 behind the White Sox. So they're right there. They made the moves. It looked like they slumped, and now the Guardians are starting to make that move. And you can see them overtaking the White Sox. I mean, I hope not. I'd like to see the White Sox as a new team in the playoff, but you can see the Guardians doing it. The Rangers Astros thing is going to come down to the wire, and the Mariners aren't even gone yet. I know they're 3 back, but 3 back isn't a lot in the West, where the leader in the division is 500 going into today. And right now, you know, the Yankees lead the Astros 6-3, so the Astros could go backward. With that. In the National League, it's going to come down to the Padres and the Diamondbacks, it looks like, for that last spot.
Yep.
And will the Phillies overtake the Cubs on the Cubs' current slump to get the home field in that matchup? Because, let's be honest, I think we'd all be all in for a Philly-Cub wild card series. I think that's a pretty interesting one to watch.
That would be incredible.
It'd be kind of fun. Yeah. Philly and Chicago, I think it'd be pretty good. I think if they got Yankees, Red Sox, and Phillies and Cubs, I think that the networks would be over the moon if it stayed the way it is right now. It's, there's compelling first round series at least out there anyway.
Okay.
Anything from you, Kev?
Yeah, I have one little gem here. Last week I mentioned the 22-0 Milwaukee Brewer win over the Seattle Mariners.
Yes, you did.
Well, this past weekend, the Mariners went ahead and lost 19-2 to the Cubbies. The interesting thing there, Bryce Miller was the starting pitcher for Seattle in both games. Fourth starter in Major League history, and the first one since the great George Van Haltren of the Brooklyn Wonders in 1890 to be the starting pitcher and give up and lose by at least 17 runs.
Gino had his rookie card.
See?
Just go back. Came with some really good comeback then.
Something we haven't seen in 136 years. There you go.
Wow.
That's awesome.
All right, Gino.
All right. You guys got anything else before we go to college football?
Just a quick NFL, right, Kev? You're going to touch on the Jets a little bit?
Yeah, the Jets, you know, they won 17-0. Actually intercepted a couple of passes. I mean, I can't wait for them to intercept the first one this year just to shut everybody up about last year's stats. You know, we know how bad it was. Geno, perfect 7-for-7 on his first and only drive, so at least he looked good, got the ball spread around. And I think, you know, overall, you know, we know the weapons are there, especially if Breece Hall is healthy. You've got Garrett Wilson. You've got Breland Allen. You've got some other depth of receiver and tight end. You've got the tackles. If Geno can play, I'm not saying he's going to go 7-for-7 every drive, but as long as Geno is competent, this team's going to be fun, much more fun to watch than last year. I'm not saying they're going to win a lot, but they're going to be much more fun.
Yeah, I mean, Kev, this team could finish 5-12, 6-11, 4-13 again, but they're going to be better.
Yep.
Regardless of the record. They may not have a better record.
Yep.
But they were non-competitive in a ton of games last year.
Yep.
So now, you see, listen, the one thing that you're not really worried about offensively, but Sadiq is going to be very slowly moved along because he hasn't played since hernia surgery, so he hasn't had any off season. So, yep. But it's not like Mason Taylor wasn't a kid that we liked already.
Oh,
not like they don't have anybody at tight end. They do, and Ruckert as the backup is fine. Adonai Mitchell seems to have gone to a different gear. The running back depth is really good.
Isaiah Williams is a terrific camp receiving.
Absolutely, he's been outstanding. Actually, Amari Cooper are really battling for 3 and 4 right now.
Yep.
And even a guy like Tim Patrick sitting there at 5 is actually like a veteran receiver. Gee, you have something to say.
Kev.
Yeah.
So, expert consensus rankings, fantasy football.
Yep.
Yes.
Has Garrett Wilson around 19 amongst wide receivers.
A lot of that is going to be because of the quarterback situation.
Go ahead. Around 19, okay? Yep. The top 11 are kind of solid. There's no way you're going to move him under the top 11, okay?
Right.
Do you think he finishes 13-16 because Geno's there this year?
If they're playing well, if Geno plays all year, yes. If they're not overall playing well and you see a lot more Cade Klubnik in the second half, his numbers will come down a little bit and be more towards that 20th rather than 12th.
Now, just remember, though, he was leading the league in receptions when he got hurt last year, the first few weeks.
Yep.
So it's not like he wasn't one of the top five guys early on in the year.
And that
was with crap at quarterback. That was with Justin Fields, who after week one, both Kevin and I were like, oh, he's much better than we thought. Then we watched Justin Fields play week two. Gino again was like, no, Justin Fields. And we were like, no, he looked pretty good. You know,
understood.
Not good. You know,
understood.
But,
I'm throwing Kev a little curveball with fantasy football. I know he usually doesn't partake in these things any longer, but just throwing them. They also have Breece Hall ranked around 13 for running backs, approximately. Do you like him at 13?
I think he's better than 13.
Well, remember, you don't know at this moment how much they're going to use him with other backs and how many, you know.
With how much they're paying them, I think he's going to be the bell cow.
I can see Braylon Allen getting some carries close to the goal line because he's just so big. But Breece Hall is the guy that's going to break the long ones. You know, it's funny. I saw. I'm taking a slight aside on this because it was something I saw that was the most ridiculous thing I'd seen. That was pro jet, by the way. I forget what publication was, but they had a rankings out by position, and there's a position in the NFL that the Jets are number one at, linebacker.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Demario Davis is 37 years old, and Sherwood's coming off a crap year. What the hell are these guys watching? And I don't mean it in a bad way, because Demario Davis is a great leader, and he's going to get a lot of tackles and going to be helpful. But I'm like, I mean, what are you backing up Bailey because you're going to call him an edge outside line? I don't know what they're talking about. But and the running game thing, you know, it's always going to depend on usage by the offensive coordinators and how they do it. And not just the Jets, but everybody else. I mean,
I am not interjecting my opinion at all. I was just curious what Kevin had to say.
When I go through the NFL running back situation, right, it's Bijan and Gibbs, whichever way you want to put them. I put Bijan first. A lot of people put Gibbs first, right? Barkley's a guy you have to consider up there. Derrick Henry, you got to consider up there. Jonathan Taylor, obviously, McCaffrey. And then after that, to me, it's kind of an open – it's an open run after the top six. I don't think anybody else stands out as amazing after the top six, where it could be anybody that kind of moves into that seventh spot.
Well, if you are counting on McCaffrey being healthy, he's top five with no doubt.
Yeah, no,
as long as you're anticipating health for McCaffrey.
This is all based on health.
You know, because McCaffrey's top three if you're counting health.
But you know, that's hard, though, because Jonathan Taylor's really good, too, and they have a good old line. There's a lot of guys.
I was just looking up the Jets.
A free-for-fall, and I feel like from, like you said, 10 or 11 on in wide receivers, kind of a free-for-all. It's going to be if the quarterback's accurate, what quarterback gets hurt, what quarterback has time. Because Garrett Wilson, if he does one thing well, he runs good routes. He's just never had anybody on the other side. Now we're going to see if Adonai Mitchell and the tight end – and the slot guys and Frank Reich's offense is going to free him up to have opportunities to get one-on-one opportunities. If he's not able to do that, Geno's going to be – if it's good Geno, he's got a shot. And if it's Geno that's Jameis Winston without the excitement, then it's not the same thing. I mean, because we don't know what Neighbors is. Right now, Neighbors would be ranked ahead of Wilson, but he's hurt.
Yep.
So we don't know how good Neighbors is going to be. We don't know if Dart's going to take the next step or if it's going to regress. I mean, that's just the team across the way. And I don't think he's going to regress. And I don't think Neighbors is going to fall backwards. But, you know, there's a lot to go over.
So I actually – if you're talking Dart, I actually think there is going to be a little regression with Harbaugh this year. But I think the following year, I think Dart takes a huge jump. Because I think Harbaugh is going to change the entire playbook, and I think last year Dart was asked to do 8 things and do them well, and that's all. And I think Harbaugh is going to ask him to do 400 things, and I think it's a huge difference between what he was doing and what he's going to do. So I do think there is a slight change, but I can see Dart next year taking a huge jump.
The one thing with Dart, and we're going to do NFL next week, everybody, I promise you, and we'll get into this. Dart plays like a renegade. And when you play like that, the chance of injury gets increased. Between him and Scadaboo, I mean, you know, these guys are going to be fun to watch, and you're going to be scared with your head in your hand as a Giant fan, praying that they're not getting hit late or hit hard on these things, because they both play with abandon. Yeah. I mean, Scadaboo's doing flips and all this other stuff, and he's not that big a guy, but he doesn't care. And it's going to be – the Giants will be different. We'll get much more NFL next week.
And
Kevin and I are optimistic about our Jets.
And the Giants did bring in Najee Harris this week to solidify the running back position.
Well, Tyrone Tracy had a big fumble in the preseason game. You don't know how Harbaugh is going to handle the running backs that do that.
And missed the big block.
He missed the big block on it as well. You're right. And you know, so Najee
between that and Scadaboo, you know.
And then we're playing against a Dolphin team that's quite exciting. I'm going to give you guys a few treasures, and then we'll go into the college.
I've got two more things. I've got one other thing here.
Yeah, go for it, buddy.
You know what Saturday is, Darren?
It's Travis weekend,
it's
son.
It's Travis Day, son.
It is?
I mean, we don't have to preview the race too much, but my goodness, this is a loaded field. Golden Tempo, who won the Derby and the Belmont.
Yep.
You've got Napoleon Solo, who won the Preakness.
Yep.
Renegade, who was a runner-up in the Derby, won the Jim Dandy. Ocelli, maiden that ran third in the Derby, still at winless, but is still sets all times for records for winnings by a maiden.
Emerging Market still in this race, who's a good horse.
Yep. Baby Vino, who won the Haskell.
Yep.
Wow.
Leading Change, Sea Strike, who both won some big stakes races coming up during the summer here.
I think he's the third choice right now, Sea Strike, right? If I look at it correctly. Yeah, I think he's like 5-1. He's the third choice in this one.
The Puma and Silent Tactic, who would have been horses to look at in the Triple Crown race, they were hurt. You know, they're back. So this may be the deepest Travers Field we've had seen in a long time.
Huge.
So it's going to be a fun Travers to watch this weekend.
Going to be an awesome road to Saratoga, which I went to last week, and both my father and I won. Dad won 200. I won 240. It was a nice
week. Very nice.
Excellent. I hit 2 pick threes, but they didn't pay well. And I've never done that in my life. I hit a double. I hit a triple. I hit 2 exactas. My father hit 2 triples and an exacta. You know, it was like, but they weren't paying huge. But anyway, it was a great time in Saratoga.
Very good.
And women's college basketball, just to touch on, because it's a political thing here too. So last year they brought in the Ukrainian center, 6'5" girl, Kate Koval, transferred in from Notre Dame. Played this year, 8.5 points, 6.5 rebounds. This year, Kim Mulkey went out and recruited, what's her name here? I'm losing the name here. Anna Mineva from Russia. So after that came in, Koval decides, being Ukrainian, I can't play with the Russian, decides to transfer.
Wow.
I mean, so it's amazing how the world politics that we don't really think of at a sports level affects some of these athletes. It's amazing that, you know, there's still this tension, rightly so, between Ukraine and Russia.
Listen, you remember back in the day when the Yugoslavian team was all together, and then when they separated after the war with Croatia, and Drazen Petrovic and Vlade Divac, who were best friends, did not speak.
Yeah.
And it was because it was Serbia and Montenegro were against Croatia, and it divided up the entire Yugoslavian team, which won the gold.
Yeah.
They were that, Raja, they were a stacked team.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, the European politics and the world politics makes it real exciting.
Yeah. But, you know, just in college in general, so the Big Ten was the first one to kick it off. The SEC did it. The Big 12 announced they're doing it. Basically, these big conferences are announcing that any of these ones that gained their extra year of eligibility who already signed pro contracts are not allowed back in their conferences.
And it's the right thing to do. We shouldn't have pros back.
Yeah. You've entered the draft. You got into training camp. Now all of a sudden at the 11th hour, 12th hour, you're going to start bringing these guys back? No. I'm sorry.
One SEC team abstained from voting. Can you guess which one it was?
Would it be the controversial Lane Kiffin?
Yes, it would be. They would not vote on it because he's the one that brought the guys back.
Yeah.
Lane Kiffin.
Lane will do anything. He would sell out his own mother to get
that recruit. Guy's got that. If you look up scumbag in the dictionary, there's a picture of Lane Kiffin. I'm telling you.
I try not to go that way, but yes.
And you never felt that way about his father, Monty, at all. You never heard a bad word about Monty Kiffin, but his son's he's a piece of work. We'll put it that way.
Yep.
Put it that way. I'm going to give you guys a couple of quick treasures, and then we'll get into the college football preview. Football. The Miami Dolphins are carrying $179.7 million in dead cap space. Number one by a mile, okay? Tua is owed 55.4. Tyreek, 28.2. Jalen Waddle, 23.2. Jalen Ramsey, 20.9. Minkah Fitzpatrick, 13. Zach Sealer, 11.4. Bradley Chubb, 11. Teron Armstead, 10.7. That's just the guys over 10. That's what the Dolphins have right now. $180 million in dead cap. I mean, I know they thought the season was over, and I get it and all that, so they're going to get it all done in 1 year. It makes sense to an extent. I'm not saying it's a bad job by them, but my goodness, I've never seen a dead cap that large in my life. Usually you get excited when you see $50 million or $40 million in dead cap. This is $180 million.
I knew two was up in that 50 or 60, but my goodness, all those names, wow.
These guys, I've never seen a dead cap that high.
Yeah.
Just an interesting thing, and you guys might know this already. So Stan Musial's last ever base hit was against the Reds, and he hit a grounder past a rookie second baseman named Pete Rose.
Wow.
So the rookie, Pete Rose, you know, 18 years later, first game back from the strike, Rose got the hit to pass Musial, and Musial went out in the field and greeted him. The fact that they were both with each other for that, you know, Rose was part of Musial's last hit, and then Musial was there for Rose's hit that passed him. I thought it was an interesting story. I did not realize it was against that. I mean, listen, it was a grounder up the middle that Pete couldn't get to. I'm not trying to.
Yeah.
But, you know, nonetheless. And the third one's an old-time story, but you might know it. August 24, 1919. You remember it, Gino. You were in the stands, row three. Ray Caldwell was struck by lightning on the field in the middle of the ninth inning. He got back up, you know, recovered, and got the final out of the game for the win, you know, as well as one does back in 1990.
Of course.
Caldwell's contract intentionally required him to go drinking after every game he pitched, sleep it off the next day, and return back to the team the following day to prep for his next start. He was known for outbreaks of misbehavior over the desire to party, so the Indians wanted to get it out of his system.
Wow.
After each game he pitched, so this way he wouldn't miss out on opportunities. But just that season, Caldwell threw a no-hitter a few weeks later. He went 5-1 with a 1.71 ERA for Cleveland that year after he was traded to the Indians, right? Also, he was one of only 17 pitchers allowed to continue throwing spitballs after it was outlawed in 1920. This guy had quite the career for a guy I really didn't know. He got struck by lightning, dusted himself off, recovered, won the game, and that wasn't even the most interesting thing. The drinking thing really blew me away, and then he was allowed to keep throwing his ball. Also doing no-hitter 2 weeks later. So those are my three buried treasures. I thought that they were interesting this week.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Let's talk college hoops. College
basketball. Football. Oh, college football.
let's go with the pigskin instead. Kevin, let's start with the Big Ten.
Yeah. Is it them or the SEC the best conference in football? Well, they've got three straight national champions to say, hey, maybe we are, between Michigan, Ohio State, and Indiana last year. And, you know, you look at this year, they're starting off Ohio State, Oregon, 1-2 in the polls. Indiana's sixth in both polls. You've got USC, Michigan, Washington State, Penn State, all in the teens. Iowa's ranked. You know, they've got in the top half of each conference, you can go toe-to-toe with both. You know, you can match up both conferences and you'd be fine.
It's the bottom of the conference that makes the SEC seem stronger.
Yep.
But the top, you're right, Kev. You know, it's hard to argue that Ohio State isn't, like, the most consistent team we've seen over the last 5 years. It's hard to argue that Indiana hasn't emerged as, like, just a – super team, and hard to argue that Oregon doesn't have as much talent as anybody. I mean, these teams are great, and the other ones you mentioned are all very good. Washington, solid. Minnesota's better than people think. Illinois is pretty good. I mean, they have enough on the top. It's just
the bottom. When you get into the Rutgers and the Marylands and those types of teams, it gets a little rough at the bottom there.
I agree. So I mean, but let's talk about it, Kev. Like, Ohio State, Oregon, Indiana. Which is the team you lean toward? Who's the team you kind of think is the cream of the crop?
Indiana, I'm going to not put up there. They're bringing in Josh Hoover from TCU to replace Mendoza. We'll see how he does there. I know Cignetti's done a terrific job there. But I still like Ohio State and Oregon a little better than those two. I think Ohio State, especially with Jeremiah Smith outside, helping to catch the passes from Julian Sayin. They've got, you know, the best name running back in college football, Bo Jackson.
Yep, absolutely. The other Bo.
The other one. Now, the thing with Ohio State, you know, they do play Oregon. They do play Indiana. They've got the non-conference game against Texas. I think their strength of schedule is just a little bit harder than Oregon's. So I think Oregon can maybe do something that way to squeak by Ohio State, but these two are going to battle the whole way.
I mean, here's the thing. So they go to Texas, like you said. They go to USC, which is not easy. They go to Indiana, which is not easy. They go to Iowa, which is not easy. Yep. They host Oregon, so they get that matchup at home. And they host Michigan, right?
Yep.
The teams that they skip that you would call good are the middle-level teams, Penn State, Washington, Minnesota, if you want to put them up there, right? So the schedule is not friendly to them. Ohio State season comes down to that Texas game because it's hard to imagine they're going to roll through all four of the road games in the conference, in my opinion. Plus, Oregon and Michigan at home make it tough. Saiyan's back. And much like we talked about C.J. Carr last week with Notre Dame, you're hearing good things about him, too. Guy completed 77% of his passes as a true freshman last year. I mean, and he's going to only be better. 32 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. Jeremiah Smith, Gino, just so you understand how you position him with these other wide receivers in the NFL, he's 6'3", 223, and runs a 4.3. He's built like a tank that runs right past you, that drives like a Lamborghini, but he's built like a tank.
I mean,
he's not comparable. He's not comparable.
I mean, he has potential to be a wide receiver at number one overall. If a team has a quarterback and doesn't get the trade they want to trade down, Smith is in play for the number one pick.
He's also in play for the Heisman if he gets enough touches. The reason why he won't be is because they've brought in the great Arthur Smith. And what Arthur Smith does is he takes great talent and neutralizes it by spreading it around, as we saw with the Atlanta Falcons for several years. So Arthur Smith will do a great job, and they'll run the ball more. And we'll see more Bo Jackson this year, I think, because of Arthur Smith's presence on this offense. But, you know, the O-line's fantastic. You know, I mean, the defense, they lose all those three names. It's hard to replace those names.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they have good players on defense, but you're talking about Reese and Styles and Downs and that's the only place where you get nervous, plus the road games. The schedule's rough. Yep. The Texas game is like, you know, I'm sure they're kicking themselves for scheduling it.
But if they win that one, my goodness, does that
it's huge.
That just cements them. That alone would cement them into the CFP.
No, I agree. And what you get is – and I think they're going to win that game on the road. I really do. I think they're better than Texas. I know a lot of people don't, but I do. I mean, you get Arthur Smith and Pat Patricia. I mean, you get, like, known commodities at the coordinator spot. This team is really, really good.
They are.
So let's get into Oregon then, though. What's the what makes them stand out, Kev?
Well, to me, obviously it's Dante Moore. I mean, he's going to be more than likely, you know, because quarterbacks go one in the NFL draft. It's either him or Arch, and I think Dante Moore right now has proven to be – better quarterback than Arch Manning. And, you know, he makes that team go. I mean, he's accurate as all can be. And they've got great depth all around. Right, Darren?
I agree. The one thing I'll say to you, and it's something I've been thinking about a lot, and I've said it a few times, is that nobody thought Francisco Mendoza was the number one pick coming into the draft last year.
Yep.
No one thought that he'd be the guy. So we don't know who's going to be the top quarterback.
Right.
It could be anybody. You know, somebody could just emerge out of nowhere that we're not expecting. It could be Nico out at UCLA. All of a sudden, everybody forgets about him for 1 year because he has all the drama, comes back. You know, maybe Cignetti's the quarterback whispering, Josh Hoover stops turning the ball over and airs it out. I mean, there's a lot of guys that could be that player. But Dante Moore, listen, I was okay if the Jets took him last year. If we happen to get him next year, I'll be ecstatic. I like the kid a lot. The roster's loaded. The big question for me with Oregon, and we'll go through the schedule in a second, is can Dan Lanning win a big game in a big spot?
Yeah.
Because he's
come up short a few times here the last few years.
He has, and the roster's loaded. The roster might be better than Ohio State's overall because of the defense they bring back, which is just sound and so strong. And the schedule, okay, now it may not seem like big games, but they host Boise State, which is a team that's definitely in play for the top 12 to start, right? Yep. They have to go to Oklahoma State, which doesn't seem like much, but Oklahoma State's going to put up points and going to be a good offense. Then they have to go to USC. They have to go to Illinois. They have to go to Ohio State. Then they get Michigan and Washington at home, but they got a couple of tough ones. They skip Indiana and Iowa and Penn State, which is helpful. But, man, you know, Oregon's going to be again, the schedule is not easy for these guys. If you were going to go for a third team, would you say it's Indiana, Kev?
Part of me likes Penn State.
All right. I like their schedule, to be honest with you.
I mean, they avoid the top three. They bring in Matt Campbell. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they bring in Rocco Beck from Iowa State. I mean, you know, maybe, you know, a little jet thing, a little jet connection with Anthony Beck being his father. But, you know, we saw Rocco Beck to Iowa State. He's a really good quarterback. And I think, you know, especially under Campbell there, I think they've got a really good chance of, because they're not playing any of the top three teams there, Ohio State, Oregon, or Indiana, their schedule sets up, they could very easily get, you know, a good enough conference record with one or two losses to be in that title game.
Here's the thing. They skip Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Ohio State, and Oregon. Arguably five of the top seven teams, right?
Illinois, yeah.
Yeah, so they play USC at home. They have to go to Michigan and go to Washington. And anyone that doesn't think going to Washington is difficult doesn't know football, because going to Washington's a tough spot, especially with their quarterback. And we'll talk about him in a minute. But they're going to be real good. USC is a dangerous team too, though, Kev.
They are.
Jaden Maiva, he could be a star. I mean, he might be the quarterback. He could be the number one pick in the draft. He's the guy no one's talking about. But he's a stud. He had a 91.2 QBR last year.
My goodness.
Good. I mean, Luke Ewers and Lincoln Riley, they have the offensive coordinator coach combination that is definitely going to be offensive minded. And if Lincoln Riley doesn't get into the playoff this year, Gino, he's probably gone. I mean, you know, you can't keep him around anymore.
Their problem last year has been the defense. Have they fixed the defense enough?
Starters also out of 22 positions. It's not bad. The quarterback, the top two running backs, the leading tackler, the top three sack producers. Extremely experienced offensive line. It's going to come down if the defense is better. But schedule for these guys, they get Oregon and Washington at home. They have to go to Penn State. They host Ohio State, have to go to Indiana. So it's not easy. They skip Illinois, Iowa, Michigan, and Minnesota. So it's a little bit different than everybody else, than say Penn State, because the schedule is a little bit more challenging.
I think, you know, a team like Michigan, if it wasn't for their schedule, they bring in Kyle Whittingham, who's been a terrific coach at Utah.
Yeah. You get that Oklahoma game in the
Oklahoma. They've got Oklahoma, and they play the top three, Indiana, Oregon, and Ohio State. I mean, were they going to be lucky to go 2-2 in that group? More than likely 1-3?
At Oregon, at Ohio State. You play them both on the road. You get Indiana and Penn State at home and Iowa at home. The best skippers they have is USC. It's not easy. And again, Bryce Underwood was underwhelming as a freshman. He could be a lot better this year. We're going to find out. I mean, I know you don't love them, but we have to touch on Indiana. They are the defending champs.
They are.
You know, so Josh Hoover, listen, I follow TCU football a lot. You guys don't like I like the Horny Toads. He's a better deep ball thrower than Mendoza. He's just a gunslinger. He just throws too many picks. That's the thing with him. So you got to find out. And he's also much smaller. He's 6'2", 210, as opposed to Mendoza, who's built like a tank. The issue, I mean, listen, he's thrown 33 interceptions in 3 years at TCU. So he does make the mistake. It's going to be if Mike Shanahan is the OC and Cignetti can get him to be under control, because he does throw a great deep ball. I mean, they did the same thing with Rourke. He threw 5 interceptions 2 years ago. Mendoza had 6 last year. If they can keep Hoover to that number, they're competitive. Because, again, their schedule, and they've had a relatively easy run with schedule the last 2 years. They have Ohio State at home, USC at home. Their only rough road games are Michigan and Washington. Minnesota, you want to call that at home. They skip Illinois. They skip Iowa. They skip Oregon. They skip Penn State. I mean, again, Indiana seems to find the lucky spot here in the Big Ten with the schedules. And, Gino, the one thing that sucks about this is that they don't all play each other, and they have too many teams in these leagues, so you will never know who's good and who's good. So these are arguably the top seven. If there's a team that you're sitting there liking a little bit on the outside, who's that team, Kev?
Iowa.
Okay.
It's Kirk Ferentz. We know the defense. I mean, you assume they got to come back with the regular defense that they've been playing the last few years where, you know, I mean, my goodness, the over-unders on their games have been under 30 how many times in the last few years. That's how good the defense has been, but that's how bad the offense has been. If their quarterback, Jeremy Hetklicki, can do anything this year, You know, he played for them last year, and if he can make an improvement this year, you know, get a little bit.
He wasn't the starter last year. They had Gronowski that started last year,
right?
And Gronowski is the guy that came from South Dakota State. He played a little bit. He was a sophomore.
Yep.
Hank Brown was also on the roster. He beat him out, I believe, Heklinski. So that's a big thing. Ferentz is there 28 years. I mean, it says they went from Hayden Fry to Ferentz. Yeah. They've just been here forever.
Kev, Iowa's over under is 7.5 wins.
I take him as the over.
You know, here's the thing, Gino, right? You bring up Iowa. They finished 9-4 last year, right? Mm-hmm. Four losses. Lost by Indiana to Indiana by 5. Lost to Oregon by 2. Lost to Iowa State by 3, and lost to USC by 5. So the four losses were a team that had really struggles on offense, were a combined 15 points.
Yeah.
They were in every game. You know, the ground and pound, they get Kamari Moulton back. He had 878 yards rushing. The O-line is good. It's Iowa. They're always good. They just fill these corn-fed guys, and they just run out there. And you know what the defense is going to do? They had to rebuild the line, but they did it. I mean – safety, Zach Lutner's a stud. They've got some good players. If there's a team, I'm going to sit there and say, answer the same question I asked you. I'm going to say Minnesota's interesting. And I like Illinois, too, but I'm going to say Minnesota. And the reason why, I think Darius Taylor's a big-time running back. I think P.J. Fleck's done a pretty good job there. I think that their defense is really good. They're bringing back Maverick Baranowski, 103 tackles from last year. They have a big-time pass rush defensive end guy whose name has escaped me, Smith. I can't remember his first name. I'm sorry. They went 7-0 at home, so they're tough to beat in Minnesota. And they bring their quarterback back. Drake Lindsey's like Minnesota always replaces the quarterback every year. Somebody knew.
They're just one of those teams that does that. Yep.
Yeah. The Drake Lindsey comes back. They return a lot of the receivers. They're a defensive first physical team. They remind me of what Iowa's been in the defensive side of the ball this year. I think they have the potential to be kind of that good. I think they're going to be in the final, the championship? No. I think they're an 8-4, 9-3 type team that can be competitive.
And, Darren, you mentioned one team or one quarterback earlier, but you didn't mention the team at all, but you mentioned Damon Williams a little bit from
Washington Huskies. Yeah, talk about him.
Well, I was going to say, you could go ahead and talk. You're the one that brought up Damon Williams.
This guy's a dual threat stud. I mean, he can run it, he can throw it, he's dynamic. He's tough to sack. You know, it's another season in the same system for a young quarterback. He should be able to make that jump in Jed Fish's system. I don't know if Jed Fish is a great coach, and I don't know if Washington's going to win enough games with Jed Fish. The schedule, I mean, they opened with the Apple Cup Wazoo, and then they have to go to USC. They host Iowa, Penn State, Indiana, and have to go to Oregon. So it's not an easy schedule. But this is a team that could very easily, because of the dynamic play of Damon Williams Jr., could be really competitive. They could be a 9-3 squad. The old line has improved significantly. They have young talent all over the place. They were 9-4 last year. I mean, with the quarterback back on a 9-4 team, I mean, they did lose some talent, but it's always hard to tell because there's so many players that get transferred in and out. But it's going to be interesting. Another interesting quick point, Michigan State brings in Pat Fitzgerald from Northwestern.
Yep.
So suddenly you're going to see Michigan State become the hard-nosed team that he always had at Northwestern. G?
Kev, you mentioned Penn State before. Their over-under is 8.5. Do you like them at the over with the under?
Oh, yeah.
You like the over with them also?
I think that.
What's Minnesota's over-under? Can you look that up?
Minnesota's at 6.5.
I like the over there, and I know that's not something that's popular. I just don't.
All right, you guys will like it a lot of the overs. So Indiana's at 10.5.
Under. I like the under.
Okay.
Oregon is at 10.5.
Not touching it.
Now, Oregon, I like the over.
They're
going to
go
that,
11-1 or 10-2, I think. I don't know which way.
Are
these for regular season only?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looking at their schedule, the 12 games, their only hard game is really Ohio State. So, you know.
Not so fast, my friend. USC is not an easy game, pal.
So wait, so just going down that number though, Ohio State is 9.5.
I like the over.
Over.
Michigan is 8.5.
Under.
Under. Yeah.
Okay, and then the only other one that's 8.5 is USC at 8.5.
Over.
I got.
And then everybody else is below that number, so.
It's gonna be a. Listen, it's going to be a wild season in the Big Ten.
Very competitive at the top half.
Kev, gun to your head, who gets out of it? You say Oregon?
I say Ohio State.
Okay, I'm going to agree with you. Because God forbid we ever go different on anything. I'll agree with you.
I'm taking Oregon.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Gino.
Listen, I'll be rooting for Oregon because I want to see a new team get in there. But, you know, but we'll see what happens. I think Ohio State's really good.
The one under that jumped out at me when I was looking at it and I look at the schedule was Nebraska under 6.5.
You know what? They're not that bad. And listen, they definitely lose
all of those teams you right, like the over
backup, by the way, which is interesting, right?
Darren, all those teams you guys like the over, they have to be somebody.
Well, Matt Rule's pretty good. They bring in Dana Halverson just by who he is, that offense should be better than it is. And they bring in Calandria from UNLV, who had a big year last year. So Nebraska is no walkover. And to be honest, much like other big schools in college football, we need Nebraska to be good again. Nebraska is one of those schools that's supposed to be good. Tom Osborne good. Tough. Yeah. And they haven't been in a while. Kev, let's skip to the Big 12.
All right. Big 12, I think, you know, we're looking at 3 or 4 teams with a legitimate chance here and maybe one or two others that could jump up there. Mm-hmm. No powerhouse team, but, you know, I think the big three are definitely going to be Texas Tech, BYU, and Utah.
Don't sleep on Houston,
right?
Yep, you can't sleep on Houston. You're pretty good.
I figure you're going to say them, yep.
And I think TCU can be competitive. I think Kansas State, because the schedule can be competitive. Those would be the 6 that I would say are on the top, but yes.
Okay, so 8.5 is really the cutoff, and it's Texas Tech at 10.5, BYU, Houston, Kansas State, and Utah at 8.5. You mentioned TCU. They're at 6.5 on the over-under list.
Yeah, I mean, TCU has some questions that you have, and they had some drama this week where the starting safety got thrown off the team for attacking the wide receiver in the locker room. Putting him in the hospital. So there was some drama going on there, and they opened this week. They're the team that opens this week. They play North Carolina in Dublin.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, I think BYU as an over is kind of locked to me on this one.
I think so, too. They've got my favorite non-Gamecock quarterback in the country. I love a quarterback. There is number 47. I'm sorry.
And watch his name BYU. Is Bear.
Bear Brockmeyer. I mean, come on. No, watch him last year. I mean, I got to watch a lot of his games, you know, being late Saturday night out there in BYU. And he's just one of these tough, gritty guys. I mean, he and Haynes King were my two quarterbacks to watch. And the fact that Bear's still around, I think that gives BYU a chance. I mean, I don't see any reason why he's not going to progress.
Not just around. He's only a sophomore. Last year was his first year. The problem with Bear and BYU last year, honestly, was he was like a magician in the fourth quarter. If they can get him to play in the first three quarters as well as he plays when they need him in the end of the game, BYU could run away with this. And they have that opportunity nobody else has. Notre Dame goes to their place October 17th. That's a non-conference game. No other team in this conference can brag about or talk about. They have an opportunity of Notre Dame coming to your house. You go back there next year. Good luck at the touchdown, Jesus. But the Mormons host this year, and it's going to be very interesting with them. Defense only gave up 19 points a game, and you could argue this team could have been in the playoff. They only lost to one team, but they lost to them twice. Texas Tech blew them out twice. I mean, they were good last year. I think BYU is the team to beat in this league. Texas Tech also good, but they had the drama in the offseason. The Brandon Soresby drama. Let's be honest. They played really well in the playoff last year defensively. They were in that game against Oregon despite it being 23-0. But Barrett Morton couldn't move the ball on Oregon's defense. And they thought Soresby was going to be the guy. I think Hammond is fine. I liked what I saw from Hammond last year. I don't think it's a big drop-off, but there's a lot of drama and a lot of pressure that comes from all the – Soresby's going to be quarterback. Now it's back to Hammond. You don't know how the team can react to that, Kev.
But you saw who they brought in the last day or so.
Who'd they bring in lately?
Tommy Castellanos.
Well, I think they're still going to go with Hammond.
I think Hammond is still the guy to go with, but, you know.
They have to.
But, you know, there's an option for a couple of games into the season. If Hammond's not getting the job done, I can definitely see Castellanos getting a chance there.
Yeah, he's another one. Like, if you love Josh Hoover, you love Castellanos, another guy that's a gunslinger. But I think that Hammond's a little bit more of a dual threat guy. And, you know, Joey McGuire, listen, he got them there last year. Baron Morton was awful in that championship game. The Sorsby thing, I think, hurts this team. O-line has to be better. They gave up too many sacks. Yep. Running backs are back. Cameron Dickey Jr., they have a good running game. Defense is not going to be as good as last year. I mean, the defensive line, all transfers, all four guys were drafted. You expect that at Michigan and Ohio State and Texas. You don't expect that at Texas Tech. All four starters on the defensive line were drafted last year. Back seven's back almost completely. So there's a lot of things to like about it. It's just, are they going to be able to respond? Everything went right last year. This year, they skipped BYU, which just makes all the sense in the world. They skipped Utah, and they skipped Kansas State. So it's like, you know, their big game is home against Houston at TCU, maybe, if you want to call that a big game. It's not a tough schedule. So they could, the 10.5 could be legit, G, because of the schedule that they have.
Gotcha.
So tell me about Utah, Kev.
Well, Utah, you know, they bring back Devin Dampierre.
He's a stud,
and you know, let's face it. We know that the Holy War game between BYU and Utah is going to be the winner of that game has the edge to face what we assume is going to be Texas Tech in the Big 12 championship game. So that game is just huge. Utah also plays Houston, so that's another big matchup for them. So they've got two tough games there. I mean, they don't get Texas Tech, so that's a big plus for them. But, you know, with Dampierre and with a guy like Benny back at safety, you know, he solidifies the defense back there. And I just see them as the third best team.
Yeah, I mean, Morgan Scalley, first year head coach. I know he was with the program, but it's the first time he's at the top spot as Whittingham left and went over. So we're going to see what happens with Scalley and that team. Houston's the other team to look at. And Connor Wegman, you know, played at A&M. He's played all over. Yep. He's been good.
Is his ninth year in college?
I think Connor Wegman's 41 years. No, I mean, but he's been around for 700 yards and 36 touchdowns last year. He's only sacked 18 times. Roster's pretty good. The offense is solid. The defense is okay. The defense will have to play better for them to kind of get to the next level. But Houston can be competitive because they put the points on the board, and Wegman's not – definitely not going to be afraid. Has to go to Texas Tech, has to go to Kansas State, and has to go to Utah. So it doesn't bode well for the schedule. They skip BYU and skip TCU, but they have to go to the other three.
Yeah, I think the Texas Tech game, it's middle of September, so I think it's early enough in the season that you're going to have a good idea right after that game to see if Houston's got a chance of competing or not.
I just wish they had one of those games at home.
Yep.
All three of them on the road suck. Kansas State's interesting because Avery Johnson's back again, right? He was the highest recruit ever for Kansas State, right? And he hasn't really gone the next level. But now, you know, new head coach over at K-State now. You know, so you're going to deal with that. Colin Klein, who almost won the Heisman when he played for K-State a few years back. So he's a big-time coach. He was the offensive coordinator at A&M last year. So he kind of comes in. The schedule's pretty good. They skip Texas Tech, BYU, and Utah. Doesn't get any better than that. They skip the top three teams.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, their big games are Houston at home, at TCU, and home for Arizona. I mean, they skip the top three teams. If there's ever going to be a chance for this team to get 9 or 10 wins, this is it. You got an established quarterback who started basically 4 years now. They just, you know, they did lose some players, but they're going to have to they should be good enough to get to that 9-10 win mark and have a shot of playing in the championship, Kev.
Yep. I think one of the dark horse team, they're outside the polls right now, but Oklahoma State.
You know, Morris, baby.
First season there at Oklahoma State. But the offensive weapons, I mean, between Mista Maker, they brought in a quarterback, Caleb Hawkins at running back, Wyatt Young, wide receiver. They've got weapons all over the place in offense. Have they done enough overall to improve the roster?
It's going to be the question mark. I think Scott Frost at UCF also has a chance to be competitive in this league. The thing is, nobody wants to take that trip all the way across the country. But they got Alonzo Barnett III. You know, they bring him in. He was a Sun Belt quarterback of the year last year, player of the year, I should say, last year. They have a big-time secondary. Frost is in the second year of a second stint. All of his coordinators return. 10 starters return, which is doesn't seem like a lot, but it's a lot the way college football is run now. I think this team, you know, they were 5-7. I think that they have a good chance of going 7-5, 8-4. So yep. There's definitely some things I like about that. Kenny Dillingham has done a good job at Arizona State. Arizona could be good for Fita's back for the 17th year for him.
Yep.
There's a lot of teams to like here in this league. The thing that you don't like is like an Iowa State who loses everybody and they have to start from scratch. Prime is done, Gino. Colorado, what's their over under, kid?
That's what I was going to ask Gino. What's Colorado's over under? Because
four and a half.
Wow. And I like the under. I mean, and it's just because they're just not that good. And, you know, it went from Prime's going to leave Colorado and take a bigger job to, you know, Prime's going to have to figure out a way to turn this around without his kids playing for him.
I mean, fourth year, he's 16-21, and he had, what, 9 of them?
Yeah.
Into his second year, so he's got 7 wins the other 2 years. And if he's got another 4-win season, yeah.
So, Kev, gun to the head, who's going to win the Big 12?
BYU. I've got all the faith in Bear.
You know, I like BYU as well, but you know, it sucks. So I'm gonna pick Texas Tech just to be different. I think Kansas State's gonna get to the title game. I think they're gonna play one of those teams. I think the schedule is just if they can get enough good play out of Avery Johns, if Colin Klein can get this team going the right way, Kansas State can get to that title game. They just don't have a hard schedule.
Yep.
What do you like in this league?
Listen, I don't have the odds in front of me to win that to win the Big 12, but I think Texas Tech was by far a big favorite. But if you like Kansas State that much, I would really look at it because I was trying to find it, but I can't get the odds up that quick. But they were like a big number.
Well, the thing about it is, again, when I say it, I don't think they're the best team. Their schedule skips the top three teams in the league, and I think they can be the best of the rest because they host Houston. If they had a play at Houston, I would probably lean toward Houston as being that team. But because they're home and nobody wants to go to Bill Snyder Family Stadium, it's not an easy place to play in Manhattan, the Little Apple, Gino. But it's a challenging team to beat on the road. And K-State got the schedule in their favor. Like the Iowa State game, they're not as good. Colorado, just not as good. The Arizonas are okay. But Kenny Dillingham's team, he loses. We talked about it last week. Loses Levitt, the quarterback, to LSU. He's got to try to rebuild with a bunch of guys. Jordan Tyson got drafted. Like his big stars are gone. And they might be able just to sneak in there while the other three are beating each other up a little bit, or at least BYU and Utah are. They might be able to sneak in there and grab that spot. Oklahoma State's going to be fun with the quarterback, running back, wide receiver coming in with the coach. They're going to put up points. If they could stop somebody, they're going to be dangerous.
Yeah.
Listen, there's a lot. Listen, college football is alive, well, and here starting this week. We start with a couple of big games this week, man. Week zero. Kev, we got two big ones to talk about.
Yeah, the college football classic from Dublin, Ireland. We've got North Carolina and TCU. Huge, huge game for Bill Belichick's team. You know, it was funny. I was listening to ESPN the other morning, and Feinbaum, who I can't – even though he's an SEC shield, I can't stand Feinbaum. And I think it was Booger McFarland was the other guy on it on First Take. And my goodness, neither one of them have any sort of like for Bill Belichick. And they're predicting that by Halloween he's out.
I can see him being gone. The thing about it is – and Bobby Petrino taking over.
And Bobby Petrino.
Their offense should be better with Petrino. TCU had a little bit of drama with the safety situation getting thrown off the team. They have a new quarterback, but he's from Harvard, so you expect him to be smart. You expect him to be pretty good. They brought in the offensive coordinator from UConn to try to limit the turnovers. I know it doesn't sound like a juggernaut, but they averaged 35 points a game last year at UConn. So they've done some things at TCU to try to improve the gunslinger, error-laden team. Sonny Dykes got TCU to the championship 4 years ago. They got bombed by Georgia in an unwatchable championship game that we were all texting each other like, when did we shut this off? I guess we're not going to do a show after this because why? You know, that kind of night. when they had Max Duggan leading the way from Council Bluffs, the big story, but they couldn't do anything in that game. So he knows how to coach in big games. They have good talent. It's just the TCU should win this game against North Carolina. They're just better.
Spread's about 9.5.
They're just better. I can't imagine they don't win it. I think TCU gets off to that 1-0 start, and Carolina starts off 0-1. You guys agree? Disagree? It's not a week.
I agree.
I'm not going to pick till next week, but
I agree.
I think Belichick knows how much they need this win. I think Belichick is throwing everything at this game.
You think they're going to win it?
I think they're going to win it.
All right. And then the other big one is an ACC showdown in August. Because why not?
Of course, week zero. Why not have a conference game?
We get NC State and Virginia. Now, Virginia arguably was the hottest team down the stretch last year in the ACC. Then they fell short against Duke and didn't win the title. They would have probably made the playoff. Who do you like in this one, Kev?
I think this is one of those toss-up games, but since Virginia's home, I'm going to take Virginia.
Virginia's just better on both lines of scrimmage. Virginia returns the O-line. They return the D-line. I like lines of scrimmage. I like when you can control the ball. I think that Virginia wins this game. I think they win it. I'm not going to say comfortably, but I think they win by 7-10.
They're favored by about 4.
Yeah, I think they're going to win by a touchdown, maybe a little bit more.
Yep, I can see that.
Any thoughts on Virginia, NC State?
I'm kind of agreeing with Kev right now.
Okay.
Just taking the home team, right?
Yeah.
I just think Virginia, because of their strength on the O-line, I think that they're going to be a little bit better. And then I guess the only other team I want to mention, I mean, USC's playing. There's a couple other games, but they're not playing anybody tough. UNLV, Memphis. And it's not like Memphis loses their coach, goes to Arkansas. So a lot of changes over there. UNLV is fighting for one of those last spots, that at-large bid, so to speak, that 12th automatic bid that goes to somebody.
Yep.
Dan Mullen's gotten to the championship game all 3 years he's been at UNLV. You know, this is a must-win for the Rebels to get started, to keep their hopes alive, as they're going to have to fight teams like Boise State, James Madison, amongst others, for that last spot, Navy even. So, it's a big game. I mean, I think that UNLV has to get off quickly. They lose their quarterback to Nebraska. They lose Calandria. So, some changes there. But Dan Mullen is a good coach. I think that UNLV is a team just to watch out for the entire year, Kev.
And a new look Mountain West, too.
It's a very new look Mountain West. It's an easier Mountain West.
Because we do have a Pac-12. We do have Boise State, for example, moving out there. All the states or things that have two schools, all the states went to the Pac-12.
Yeah, San Diego State, Utah State, Colorado State, Fresno State.
Texas State. Washington State.
Oregon State.
Oregon State, yep. The only one that Colorado – Fresno State. I don't know if you mentioned them. Yeah, it's all the state schools.
All the state schools. And the Mountain West keeps UNLV and Nevada, New Mexico. I think Colorado State also went, right? Did we talk about them too?
Yeah, Colorado State went to Pac-12.
Yep, absolutely. So it's a little bit Air Force, Wyoming, a little bit of a weaker Mountain West. Eventually these two conferences are going to have to merge in order to have any kind of chance. They also bring in North Dakota State, who's an interesting team that had won a lot of championships in the FCS, and a team that's probably top three, top four predicted ratings-wise in the Mountain West in their first year. It's a team that could surprise.
Yeah, they definitely could. I mean, we know how good they've been at the lower levels, and they open up against Jacksonville State, and they're their favorite.
Yeah, they should win that one.
That's very comfortable. That should be a relatively easy win, I think, for North Dakota State to get off to a good start.
I think so, too. We're going to find out, but I think they should get off to a solid start. Listen, college football's here. Kev loves college football.
Go, Cox.
I love college football. Gino loves the playoff, and Gino loves to gamble. So Gino will find his way into any sport where there's a chance he could put money down on it, and he's good at it. If it's not just that Geno gambles as much as we tease him, Geno wins a lot. That's why he's the expert on this. It's not because of anything. Kevin and I lose a lot. Geno wins a lot. So therefore, there's a reason why we asked Geno his pick on the gambling side. Because even if he's not sure, I mean, we had a stretch, it was college basketball, when Geno like hit like 30 in a row, whatever the hell it was, Geno. And me and Kevin are just like, he doesn't even watch all these games. He's hitting.
That's not true. What the hell? That's not true.
You hit a lot. You know you do.
All right, maybe.
You know that's what you're good at. You do a good analysis.
Maybe he's 28 out of
it, and you're a bit smart. Me and Kevin are
maybe it's 28 out of 30.
Yeah. Would you miss two? Me and Kev bet with our hearts and we lose. You know, bets with his brain and he wins. He's better at it than we are. Any final thoughts on any college football or anything else before we wrap up, gentlemen? We are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren, Gino, Kevin, talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where the summer is over and college football and pro football about to come down the pike for us. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. We are going to be posting a lot more on social over the next couple weeks as football season gets started. So please like our stuff, share our stuff, join our little following, watch us on YouTube, do whatever you can to catch us. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.